Australians love their drag queens. From the land of Down Under come a lot of great drag queen sensations, like the movie Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Dame Edna, and Sydney's Mardi Gras, considered one of the world's largest pride parades.
Today, we're thrilled to have in the home studio Australia's favorite drag queen, Courtney Act. As Shane Jenick, Courtney Act was a semi-finalist on the first season of Australian Idol, and since then has made a name for herself in Australian pop music.
An extremely likable queen who gushes sex appeal, Courtney Act is rumored to be one of the top three finalists on this season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Will Courtney be America's next drag superstar?
Listen as we talk with Courtney about her wildly diverse sex life, her pragmatic approach to gender expression, and which queens from the show really got on her nerves.
Plus, an exclusive, Courtney talks about her friendship with Paris Hilton and what Paris said when she saw her own sex tape.
Singing Lady Gaga's own music for Lady Gaga's small birthday party.
And all your questions. You don't want to miss this show. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of financial support of people like you. Thank you. Upgrade your account today at feastoffun.com/plus and listen to our fabulous podcast 5 days a week.
Today we have Courtney Act, Australia's favorite drag queen. She's very sexy, she's very charming and talented. She's what Feast the Fun is all about. Welcome to Feast the Fun. I gave you a little showgirls intro.
Oh, I like there. It. Thank you for having me here.
You're one of the front runners on this season 6 of RuPaul's Drag Race. And
well, according to the betting polls.
Betting polls, yeah. You're going to win it.
Are they taking bets in Vegas yet on this?
I'm sure there's a sports bet. Or drag is a sport. They the thing about the sports bet in Vegas is they think it's about drag car racing. They haven't cottoned on that it's drag queen racing yet.
But seriously, like all the people, like when they found out that you're going to be on this season RuPaul's Drag Race, like all the other drag queens said, game over. You're the only artist that's been on the show, contestant on the show, who's already had a record deal with a major label, Sony BMG. Mm-hmm. And now you're an independent artist. And so you're kind of going backwards in the RuPaul sort of like struggled and ran up and finally got herself a record label. You had a record label and now you're going backwards and soon you'll be a genderqueer booger queen.
Is it a slippery slope backwards? Is that what you're saying?
My teeth are falling out one by one.
Yeah. And so, like, I mean, when you found yourself on the show with a lot of these queens who already knew you, who are fans of yours, I can imagine that the reaction to them behind the scenes was like, fuck this bitch.
Well, you know, you don't see their reaction behind the scenes until you see the show, because all of those interviews are behind closed doors.
Sure.
Everybody's nice as pie to your face, except for Bianca.
They seem a little rude or like a little like caught off guard by you being on the show. Like, we got to see that when you girls were all in this room finally together, it was like, oh no, this girl, oh no. And then Adore Delano was like, oh, we're going to play that game.
Well, you know what the funny thing is? Because I was on season one of Australian Idol, and I actually thought she was on season one of American Idol. Now that I've done my
math. She's not Jim Ferraros.
Well, I realized she would have been 11 years old on season one of American Idol. But it was funny because I was like, oh, you're on season one. Like, I was genuinely
like,
being nice.
Like, I was on season one, you're on season one too, right?
Yeah, and she was like, oh, we're going to play that now. And she got all defensive with that. And like weeks later, I'm like, no, I really thought you're on season one. Because she was like, well, I won't go too far about down the track, but we were talking about it later on. She was like, I thought you were such a bitch, like going on about that season one shit. And I'm like, no, really, I thought you were. So maybe you're a little bit defensive.
Maybe she paints a little old. Is that what it is?
Do you need a green card to compete for an America's Next Drag Superstar?
You used to have to be an American citizen.
Okay.
But
they changed the rules for you.
You know, they haven't actually told me like that I feel like, yes. They changed the rules for me. But they changed the rules for everybody.
So you could win. It's just like Arnold Schwarzenegger becoming the next U.S. president.
Because there was rumors going around. They're like, oh, Courtney Act is going to be on it. But no, she's not going to be on it because she couldn't get her visa and all that kind of stuff.
I auditioned for season 5 and my visa wasn't valid. I mean, my visa was valid to work, but in the rules of the competition, you had to be a U.S. citizen. Mm. And so I guess they've now opened it up for girls with working visas, which means that anybody in season 7 who has a working visa to work in the United States in entertainment can audition. So you're welcome.
Are we going to start seeing like an influx of immigrant drag queens?
You know, you very well could.
There's going to be immigrant drag queen shanty towns outside of the studio.
Yeah.
Let us onto the show.
Please let me be on RuPaul's Drag Race. I'll be America's next drag superstar. I'm very fishy. Shante, Sanche, Shanji, Shavi, Shaitar, Shanti. Those are all Indian gods. Okay, so you have had so much success in Australia. You're seen as Australia's favorite drag queen, the RuPaul of Australia already.
Well, that's a pretty big statement. I think RuPaul is the RuPaul of everywhere.
Because the something of something is the nothing of anything.
Right. Yeah.
And so, yet at the same time, you had this really good career. You were signed and you uprooted yourself and moved to West Hollywood to pursue a career in the United States. Why'd you do that?
Well, you know, I guess it's hard to explain. I guess in some ways it's like being famous in Mobile, Alabama.
Oh my God, you're not comparing Australia to Mobile, Alabama.
Well, a lot of Australian stars, they all come to Hollywood.
Yeah, big American actors are actually Australian. Naomi Watts, why can I never remember
Liam Hemsworth.
Them? But like Chris Olivia Newton-John, she was like, fuck Hollywood, I'm going back to Australia.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Australia is there's 30 million people. There's 300 million people in America. And I've had a great career in Australia, and I was getting to my Saturn return and thought, what am I going to do for the next 10 years?
Oh.
Like, do I do the same thing again? And I thought, no, I want something new and challenging. And I went to, I was on cruising around the Mediterranean with Atlantis in 2010. And then I came across to America and I did about 20 club dates all around. And I realized that this was the place that I wanted to be. It's, you know, we get a lot of American pop culture on Australian TV. We get all of the big sort of primetime shows. But we're still so removed from it. And as in Australia, we think it's like, you know, New York, Sydney, London, Paris. But nobody really in the rest of the world thinks that Sydney's in that list completely. It's a very wonderful but very small city and country. And
so are your friends and family and your fans are like, be like, sell out. You moved to West Hollywood, you stayed here in the land down under.
No, this is the great thing about Australia is that if you go overseas and Americans love you, then Australians love you even more.
Because you're never a hero in your own hometown.
You're not until you're a hero in another town.
So you become famous in America and they're just like, oh, he's a real star now because he's a star in America.
Yeah, I'm doing RuPaul's Drag Race in America, but I'm on Dancing with the Stars in Australia. No, I'm not, but that is a goal.
How did it, being an Australian idol, because you were well known for that show, and like the fact that unlike other gay American Idol contestants, you actually competed in some episodes on drag.
All of them. I went along the first day as a boy, and then I got knocked back. So I went back the next day and auditioned in drag, and I spent the rest of the competition entirely in drag.
And did they know it was you when you came back the next day?
The producers didn't, the judges didn't know instantly. And then once they'd said yes to me as Courtney, the producers ran in and said, by the way, she was here yesterday. And then the producers were like, what do you mean she was here yesterday? And then they explained it to them all. One of the judges, bless him, I don't think he ever really understood what was going on. So they knew that, I mean, I walked into the room and I said something like, it's okay, I had a wheelie bag behind me. I said, I'm a drag queen, not a flight attendant. And so they knew I was not a woman, but they didn't know that I had already auditioned and been rejected as a boy. And and then, I just kept getting asked back. I made it through to the top 13, and then I got booted off, and then they asked me back to do hosting the equivalent of the Grammys red carpet for Idol and then performing on different episodes. I was the opening live performance of the grand final at the Sydney Opera House. It was like a sea of hundreds of thousands of people. And it was the most watched television event since Princess Diana's funeral in Australia.
And this is for a drag queen who a year before that was selling lollipops in bars.
Yeah. The reason that I started drag is because I had this business. It wasn't so much the reason. It was the excuse that I used to start drag because I already had brief occurrences of drag and I knew that I loved it. But, starting drag is a challenging thing because nobody really wants to help you because if you want to do drag, you have to really want to do it. Because if somebody helps you do drag and then you get there and you're like, oh, it's kind of, it can take over your life and you have to be sure that it's for you. So you have to, you know, fight tooth and nail to get a career in drag, I feel.
Well, it's like adopting a child almost. You're feeding two mouths. Yeah. You're creating costumes for two different people now. Yeah. It's not your boy drag and your girl drag now.
It's not just for Christmas. It's for life. And so I was selling, I had this idea to go around nightclubs selling chewing gum and lollipops and fans from a neck tray like a cigarette girl. And the club said that
Vegemite
they liked
sandwiches, kangaroo burgers.
All of those things. And the club said that they wanted a drag queen doing it and I couldn't afford to pay one. So I donned a frock and did it myself.
So you were running the business.
Yeah.
And then you were also the sales girl.
Yeah. I had like this Perspex box fabricated. I had to catch a train like an hour, which probably doesn't sound like a lot if you live in a city that has public transport. But like I didn't have a car. I just walk everywhere around Sydney. So to catch like a train to like, just not even the suburbs, it was beyond the suburbs, like the industrial part of Sydney, to get this like Perspex box fabricated. And then I went to like the wholesale place to buy all the gum. And I had like, I did some sort of business certificate at like a, what do you call it? Vocational education, mm-hmm. sort of community college.
So in order like to sell, yeah. in order to sell gum at a bar in Australia, I have to go get a business license.
You do. Oh, Australia has Stop got it. A lot of red tape.
Shit.
And was it a good business for you?
Well, I mean, it was more than minimum wage, but it involved pounding the pavement in drag from like 10 p.m. till 2 or 3 a.m. with this neck tray, selling gum. And I'd make like, you know, I don't know, a few hundred
And then
bucks
you, at
night.
The end of the night, escort to make rent.
Exactly.
Because I'm
sell
laid
drugs
out here.
On the side.
You're probably the most attractive contestant that show has had. You know, I mean, you're hot as a guy. You're super fucking hot as a woman. It's like most gay men are like questioning their homosexuality.
I love it when gay men question their homosexuality because that's only something straight men used to question their heterosexuality. But I love now that gay men are questioning their homosexuality.
Oh, yeah. It's like we both want to bang you. If your personal assistant wasn't here, I told the listeners we'd have a three-way. And it's like, and I was kind of a little disappointed that
Moses can film.
Moses
he can?
Is cute, yeah. though. He can join.
I know. I was like, Moses is. And so between you and your personal assistant, there's no romantic thing happening there. He's like your best friend.
He's out on loan from his boyfriend in Hong Kong.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He has a Asian boyfriend?
No, he has his boyfriend and he moved over to Hong Kong four years ago.
Wow.
For his boyfriend's work.
You guys are like traveling all around the world. It's like your body's like, I don't know where the fuck I am right now.
Well, I was in Australia on Thursday.
With Chaz Bono?
With Chaz Bono. He was special guest in my one woman show, Boys Like Me, which I did at the Sydney Theatre, which is like one of, it was, I've done a lot of, like I've done entertainment centres and things, but in big, you know, the Idol tour. But this was, I think, the most legitimate solo show that I'd done. It was a 1,000-seat theatre. The Sydney Theatre, Cate Blanchett is the patron and director of the Sydney Theatre Company. Maggie Smith performed on that stage. Like, it's the real deal.
It's the real deal. So Boys Like Me is your one-woman show. Is that what you're going to be performing for us tonight in Roscoe's?
No, I'm just doing a couple of club numbers tonight. But I do really want to bring Boys Like Me back to... Mm-hmm. You know, places like Chicago and other cities around America where there's, you know, an opportunity like some cabaret. It's like a 90-minute show with a live band, songs, stories, costumes. And it actually came about because, speaking of gay men questioning their homosexuality, it came about because I found that I have a lot of really interesting sexual experiences.
Oh, do tell.
Because I, you know, I kind of live life on the gender divide. Sometimes I'm a boy and sometimes I'm a girl.
And you have a banging hot bikini body.
And
you're like a twink.
And people react differently to Shane and Courtney. And I always found it really interesting that... I remember there was, you know, what is the age-old question, what is life like for the fairer sex? Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm as close to being the fairer sex as you can get without actually being the fairer sex as Courtney.
Do your transgender friends get mad when you say that in interviews?
No.
Because they're like, I've taken the estrogen and you're not taking anything.
I know,
and
right?
you look hotter and fishier than I do.
Well, I think, no, I... I've actually, speaking of transgender friends, Chaz and I talk at length about different sort of trans issues and things like that. Yeah. And just, I don't know what day it is today, but two nights ago, we were talking and we were talking about like different, somebody on a blog somewhere or something described me as being genderqueer. And I mean, I guess I can interpret what that means. And I was kind of thinking about it, and I've had other people sort of say, well, you're trans. And I'm like, well, no, I'm a boy. And then I was talking about it with Chaz, and he sort of described that the word trans, in the mind of a gay man, trans means you were born one gender and you want to live as the other. But the word trans actually means kind of like in between. Like transcontinental.
It's an ocean of many things.
It's an ocean of many things.
Well, it's trans with the asterisk.
Yeah. And so I guess in some respects, like it's not like I'm not just like working in a theme park and putting on a Mickey Mouse costume and performing and going home. Courtney is a part of who I am, but I don't have any desire to be a woman or live as a woman. But I do really love dressing up as Courtney and being a woman kind of when she's on
and flirting with straight
Shane,
men as a woman.
I gotta tell you what you are, maybe, you know, trans. I definitely think that to be a drag queen in some respect, to choose to express yourself as a woman creatively, has a transgender component to it. But I see you more as a pragmatist. So you're like, if there's a hot, I always said this, it was like, if there's a hot guy and I'm in drag, honey, it's like, and he's on to me, we're going to have a good time.
If I have to dress in drag to get on Australian Idol, I'll do it.
You know what? I'm going to take that argument back to Chaz. You've given me some new ammunition for our discussions, because we have these long discussions about all of this sort of stuff. And I, you know, to be honest, I don't really care what I am. I'm just kind of me.
I'm so like there with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, if you want me to put on something, whether it's some ridiculous S&M leather outfit, vinyl rubber, or like, you know, tuck. Well, for me, it's like tucking is a little bit of a challenge. You know what I'm saying?
I won't do the tongue pop because I know it's not good on radio.
You can do that. But it's like, for you, it's like you've had a long career and you're so gorgeous as a woman that there have been times that you actually fell in love and a straight man fell in love with you in a bar. Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah, actually, what I was going to say, something just popped into my head.
Sure.
As you were saying, putting on the S&M and whatnot. You know why? I think it's because I am me and external things don't define who I am, which I think is an important distinction, because I think we often kind of go through life defining ourselves based on things that are external, like who am I in relation to my family? Who am I in relation to my coworkers, my lover, the people I'm attracted to? And I think what I have always endeavored to do in my own life is, rather than have outside things influence me, I'd rather sort of work out who I am on the inside and then take that out to the world. And I've done lots of like meditation retreats and things with the Buddhists in the mountain and kind of done a lot of intense kind of meditation and stuff like that. And I've kind of come to have this feeling and understanding where I feel confident in who I am. Like, I'm not like infallible or perfect. Like, I still, you know, have things that come and go and whatever, but I always feel like I have a sense of who I am. So like, you could say that you're a girl or a boy, or you're this or you're that, or you're a leather man or you're a twink, or, and all of those are just kind of really labels that are external things.
Well, it's like, you know, like fashion. So I describe like transgender people as kind of like, you have to have this one thing in order to feel complete and whole as a person. Whereas pragmatists tend to be like more flexible. And there's also transgender people who are also pragmatists too. And they're like going, well, you know, my gender expression is something that's in my heart, it's in my mind. And how I show myself to the outside world isn't that important.
Well, also because I think, you know, like we're familiar with the Kinsey scale where there's gay on one end and straight on the other. But I think very few people are like exclusively 100% gay and exclusively 100% straight. And everybody falls on this continuum in between. And I think gender's like that because, you know, we think of transgender almost as being binary. It's like you either are or you aren't. Yeah. But I think that gender is a fluid spectrum. And so there's some men who are men and there's some women who are women. But everybody, like, what does it, like, if what is gender? Is it the clothing that you wear? Is it how you feel? Like, there's all of these different
it's
components.
Everything.
And then it's traits. There's, you know, there's women out there with very masculine traits, but they're very feminine in other ways. And yeah. it's the same with men, you know?
Yeah.
What's considered masculine? What's considered feminine?
You awaken, though, I would imagine, because the fact that you're so charismatic and so well-adjusted and kind and lovely that
I'm
you...
Blushing.
You awaken the transgender attraction in a lot of people that are your fans.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that perhaps in some way, like I've met people who I liked. I've met girls that I like who transcend their gender.
You had sex with a woman like in one interview we were saying even as
last
recently
year.
Last year.
Yeah.
How was that experience like?
It was fun. There's a, you know what?
Did you break her heart? Or is she like,
no,
call me. Call me tomorrow, girl.
Who was the top?
There was, I was. It was funny. There's this, I was working in the Seychelles in Africa in January this year.
Yeah.
Last year. Yeah, last year. And I can't go into details as I've signed a non-disclosure agreement.
With
as
who?
I was working for royalty.
Oh.
And, but there was a bunch of models who were flown in from all around the world, and there was this one Russian model who both of us kind of like looked, we kind of looked similar as well, so it could have just been narcissistic. But we both kind of like looked at each other, yeah, and just were kind of like kind of enthralled by each other, and we just spent time together, and we remember like sitting there, and she didn't speak English very well and I don't speak Russian, and she was like, I want someone like you, and I'm like me. And she's like, yes, not you. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she's like, someone like you, because, you know, you like boys. I want boy who likes girls. And it was interesting because we were both sort of like confused by how we felt and what that meant. And we sort of still keep in touch. Nothing happened because we were legally confined from doing so in our non-disclosure agreement.
So she wasn't like,
non-disclosure agreement said you couldn't have sex?
Yeah, well, I guess that part wasn't non-disclosure. That was the not having sex with other people agreement.
So it wasn't like she was like, my English not so good. We fuck now, yes?
No, unfortunately.
Because
I would have.
My penis.
Oh, so you didn't have sex with her?
We didn't have sex.
Oh.
But I would have.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I'm, you know, I'm as gay as the next man. Like, I could have sex with all of the women on the planet and I'd still be really gay.
Well, I looked at your Instagram account and you had a viewing party just, I guess, recently in New York City. Can you set me up with Mark and I with all these insanely hot guys?
All of these boys are my Burning Man camp members. I can't.
So these guys are all these hot men are in Burning Man.
About 75% of them are. We all camp.
We'll put a picture on Feast of Fun on the site so you can see this. This is literally Courtney Shane out of drag surrounded by what looks like 30 porn stars. There's not an... And then who took the picture?
The timer.
Oh, it was on a timer? Someone said, like, it was Darian Lake that took the photo.
Why?
Well, some people... You know what's interesting, right? I met this group of boys, you know, through some friends. We came to camp together at Burning Man a few years ago. And they're all really lovely. I mean, I come from West Hollywood, where boys look pretty but may not have that much depth. The thing I love about all of these boys is that they all have really big hearts, and
I love your accent. Hard it's kind of like, what, did he say what I thought he said?
And they're just lovely boys. And somebody commented on it like, you don't have any fat friends. I'm disappointed at you. And I was like, I didn't know how that made me felt, because I felt, I don't know whether I felt guilt. It's never been a conscious decision. I do have friends of varying body sizes and genders. That happened to be a room full of,
It's also New York, where people are typically thinner.
They walk
and smaller,
everywhere.
You know?
Yeah.
It's hard to be heavy in New York.
Well, I live in Chicago. Some of my best friends are thick and juicy.
Well, we have space here.
You're
we
friends
have
with
room.
Roxy Andrews?
I have to thank Roxy Andrews for popularizing the phrase thick and juicy. So then you could say that it's a saying fat or something.
It's
disparaging.
A nice, it's sexy.
It's
thick
assets,
and juicy.
Yes.
Thick and juicy.
Okay, where Courtney Act, is a pun.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you say it with a Bostonian accent, it sounds like...
Courtney Act.
Caught and the act.
I don't think that was a Bostonian accent.
Courtney Act.
Courtney. Yeah.
Courtney.
Chicago would be Courtney Act.
Courtney
Act.
Well, it's caught in the act. Mm-hmm. And in Australia, we say Courtney and we say, I caught the robber. Mm-hmm.
So when you were a kid, there was a girl Courtney. In your elementary school named Courtney that you hated. Yeah. Did you name yourself after her?
No, well, I wanted to be called Ginger Le Bon. I wanted to be this, like, smoky, redheaded nightclub singer with, like, a shag cut, and she swilled on straight scotch and sang, like, Pearl's a singer, she stands up. And then my friend Vanity was like, you know what? I get it. You want to be all theatrical. I guess I kind of wanted to take like the Jinx Monsoon approach, mm-hmm. but I was like a theatrical child. I'm an actor. And then Vanity was like, you know what? You should probably be called something cutesy and girly like Courtney. And I was like, oh, Courtney. And just reminded me of this girl I didn't like. And then I'm like, Courtney. And I was like, oh, that sounds like caught in the. And I'm like, caught in the act. And it just kind of stuck.
Because like you're up to something.
Yeah.
Because Courtney in the crime. Mm-hmm.
Courtney Fish.
Transgender outlaw.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? It's like it's kind of gender outlaw kind of perspective?
At the time, it was just a play on words. It was just, I'd never heard. In Sydney, all of the drag queens have got double entendre names like Penetration. Well, there's a Penetration here. Yeah. Tora Hyman. there's all sorts of.
I like Maya Inez.
Mayonnaise. See, that's like a Courtney act. You got to pronounce that with a strange
mayonnaise.
Accent.
Mayonnaise.
How big is drag in Australia? Because, I mean, we all are familiar with the Priscilla Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
And it kind of like, you know, took drag up to that next level, right? Yeah. It was supermodel, RuPaul's supermodel, you know, and then it was like, after that, it was the Priscilla.
Yeah. Well, Priscilla was huge in Australia and it was very popular around the world. That style of drag, it was funny because... Probably much like Drag Race has done in some, it's had positive aspects and negative aspects on the on the drag community. Priscilla created a lot of interest in drag, and a lot of people would come from around the world to watch these drag shows. Like when travelers were in Sydney, they'd go to the Albury Hotel to see the home of Priscilla, and so then there was a big demand, and so then there was a big supply of drag queens, and not all of them. You know, there was a lot of there was a lot of creativity in drag in the 80s and 90s, and then it kind of became like McDonald's drag, where it was kind of like pumping that drag out. Mm-hmm. And then Vanity, my sister Vanity Fair, and I sort of came along in the early 2000s, and she was like the supermodel of drag, and I was just the young hot mess. And we started doing this kind of what you would call fishy drag, because the drag up until that point was really harsh, like the foam wigs, like black liquid liner, eyebrows and lip, like black liquid lip liner. And everybody wore like elbow length gloves and these certain diamond drop earrings.
So Hugo Weaving and Priscilla.
Hugo Weaving and Priscilla. Yeah. That's what. And then Vanity and I were like these pretty girls, and we were loathed by the drag community. We were made fun of and ridiculed.
Why? Because you're like, they're trying to pass.
Well, yeah, because, you know, in Sydney in the 70s, we had The Lay Girls, which was this all-male review. It was like a beautiful showgirl review, but everybody was male, and it was very popular. My
parents went to
see
it. And they mentioned this in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, in the musical.
Yeah.
And in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then in the 80s, it became kind of like that freaky, kooky drag. And then the 90s, it kind of became more Priscilla. And so Vanity and I came along in the early 2000s, and it was just going against the grain. And then I guess it's that comedy versus pageant battle we kind of see on Drag Race.
Now, you say, when you talk about like womanly kind of drag looking, you say, as you Americans would say, fishy. Mm. Well, what do you say in Australia?
I don't know. We've been talking about this. We didn't say fishy because the first time somebody called me fishy, I thought that I needed deodorant. And I've been working, I was chatting to some people last night, and this lady said to me, I find the word fishy offensive. And I said, well, I don't think it's got to do with the smell of your vagina, which is why I think you're offended. I think that fishy means if, like, you're somewhere and there's, like, a man in a trench coat with a suitcase and he's, like, being, like, sketchy, fishy, and you're like, there's something fishy about that guy. There's something not quite right.
No, it's the smell of vagina. You know, from what I understand, too, the word tranny actually originated in Australia, and then it was kind of imported to San Francisco and became a popular word here, and now it's kind of like... It's on the outs. So it's a word you're not
supposed to use. It's considered a slur word.
It's considered a slur word. How is it in Australia viewed?
You know, it's very different all around the world. And Chaz and I talk about this because the word tranny in the UK and Australia is a lot more liberally used, particularly in the UK. It's tranny is the word that refers to anybody who's not cisgendered. So if you're a drag queen, you're called a tranny there. If you're a transgender person, you're called a tranny. But, you know, here in the US, it's my understanding that the term tranny was originated in the sex industry and, like, that kind of chick with the dick kind of pornography. Mm-hmm. And the... not sort of like in a, there's nothing wrong with trans porn, but it wasn't sort of like that empowered trans porn. It was like a derogatory kind of thing. And I think that that is where the issues with the word tranny come from. And it's interesting because sometimes when people are saying, you can't use the word tranny anymore, it's kind of
like how you put out an American accent for that.
Somebody had a placard, as they were saying. And you're kind of like, well, why it's, you feel like people are trying to take away your fun.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a discussion that I've had with trans friends. And the problem that I had is that I had this word that I used and I didn't have anything else to use for it. And I, even when I first moved to the US, I was always like, tranny, and like, there was always like a,
trans.
And so the word, I feel it's about education. Mm-hmm. The word, if you want to refer to somebody who is formerly a tranny, you just use the word trans. So you say like trans woman, trans man. My friends and I actually, before the trouble with tranny kind of thing came up, we call each other, hey trans. That was kind of our thing. And the issue is, a friend was in an acting class and the teacher was saying, okay, so you're two like tranny, crack addict kind of hookers. No, sorry. Hang on. Let me rewind that. The teacher said, you're two like, you know, like you're two tranny crack addict hookers. And what the teacher was saying is if there's something worse in the world than being a crack addict hooker, it's being a tranny crack addict hooker. And that's the problem with the word tranny is that it can be
derogatory
in that sense. It's kind of like you're a tranny. Like it's always like if there's something worse than a mess, mm-hmm. it's a tranny mess mm-hmm. kind of thing.
I also think too, is like, you know, people here took really offense because, you know, there'd be like a dead trans person murdered and they're like dead tranny found on the edge of a bridge. And you're just like, that's not the way to refer to somebody who just lost their life.
Yeah. And so the, you know, At first I was kind of like, I didn't know how I felt about it. And I was kind of, I felt like someone was trying to take away my fun by taking away the word tranny. Cause it just was like a fun, mm-hmm. lighthearted mm-hmm. word. And, you know, especially in the drag community, drag queens kind of feel like they have some rite of passage to use the word tranny, but drag queens aren't trannies in inverted commas. Mm-hmm. And I think that I have learned from trans friends that it does offend a lot of them. And I sort of think, well, if it is offensive to a group of people who are in my community, mm-hmm. then it's really not that hard for me to not use it.
Believe them.
Believe like, them.
Oh, is that offensive? Okay, I believe you.
Okay, sure. So now I just use the word trans, and it's actually...
What's interesting is that the way the origins of that word originated in rural... I understand in rural Australia...
Oh, tranny radio.
And it was reference, it's slang for the transmission of your truck.
No, the transistor.
Transistor radio.
But it's also slang for the transit.
Oh, okay.
It's a word that has multiple meanings and
you can buy tranny oil at the motor shop.
Really?
Yeah.
It's slang for transmission. And then transistor radio, and that's where... But in Australia, that's where it started getting used because they were like, oh, you know, this slang for this very butch thing... is also sounds like it could be a cute word to describe a drag queen or a transgender person.
Right. And we love cute words in Australia. Everything has got a cute word. Everything.
You know, your dingo. Is there not a cuter word in the world than a dingo?
A dingo stole my baby. Yeah. Ate my baby. Stole my baby?
A dingo stole my baby, right?
Well, what happened to her?
Oh, my God. Lindy Chamberlain.
Has an opinion and story about her.
She was just last year, mm-hmm. finally... found innocent.
After 32 years,
a dingo did eat her baby. And the worst part was, I'm sure you've obviously seen the film with mm-hmm. Meryl Streep.
Yes, yes.
This poor woman, her baby got eaten by a dingo, a dog, a wild dog, and the whole country decided that she made it up and vilified her, and she got put in jail. She'd lost her child, and she got put in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And it, when you think about it now, and just last year she got like a royal apology and all of this mm-hmm. sort of stuff. And I'm like, well, 32 fucking years later, thanks a lot.
She's the Queen of England?
Yeah.
Because wow. she spent a good deal of time in prison, not the whole 32 years, but because she was found innocent, but then they were like, oh, for whatever reason, the court of public opinion was like, let's lynch her. And so she went back to jail and then got out.
All because I think some archaeologists found pieces of a baby's clothing in a dingo nest in wild.
Near as Rock, Uluru, as it's now called.
Wow. And the baby was only 2 months old. Could you imagine being a mother, losing your 2 month old? And then like the next 32 years of life is pure hell.
Then this week, details on Steve Irwin's death had come forward mm-hmm. with the last words he uttered before he got stabbed 100 times by a stingray.
Yeah, they brought him into the boat, and he was just like, Steve, you know, just concentrate, think about your kids. He goes, I'm dying. And then he just died.
Oh.
But they said he was attacked by the stingray because they thought it was like a shark, and he was jabbed by the stingray like 100 times, like in a matter of seconds. Those things are, I guess, very vicious.
Like semi-automatic weapons of the sea.
He thought it punctured his lung, but then I guess it hit his heart, and then he went.
Wow.
But now you're kind of becoming into that roster of a very small number of people.
Crocodile Dundee,
Olivia Newton-John.
Kylie Minogue.
And to me, it's like I would compare you more to Olivia Newton-John in Grease. More Olivia Newton-John in Xanadu.
Oh.
In the sense that you have this like totally likable, a girl of many talents, who can do lots of things.
She can roller skate.
But you're so nice that can be also your Achilles heel. Mm-hmm. And that Americans want a little bit of cynicism. You know, we're all very cynical here in the United States. And Australians are, even when they're rude to you, they're nice to you.
You know what, though? I've found that the East Coast and the West Coast have very different senses of humor.
Okay.
And I learned that because people in Los Angeles are a certain kind of people, and I mean this with love and respect. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people move to LA to become actors, to be discovered, and they're looking to be discovered, but they kind of just need to discover themselves. And there's sometimes, I'm going to say a different sense of humor. I'm not going to say lack of sense of humor because that could be disrespectful. But New Yorkers have a much similar, and East Coasters in general, have a much similar sense of humor to Australians and British. Mm. It's not quite as dry and harsh. But I learned that from hanging out with Bianca, because Bianca and I actually have a similar sick, twisted sense of humor, but it just kind of manifests differently.
Because you say it with an accent, so it sounds nicer.
It sounds sophisticated. Fuck off, cunt.
So you have Bianca's respect.
Yeah.
Stuff. Okay, before we go into the questions from the audience, you performed for Lady Gaga's birthday party.
Yeah.
And sang her songs back to her. Yeah. And you brought the backing track from that performance, and you're going to perform that for us today.
Yeah. I did this one. Actually, this song I did for her at Disgraceland in Sydney. I've performed for her 3 times now.
Okay.
And this was the second time, and this was in a nightclub, 340 people, and I kind of opened for her, and then she went on and did like a 4-track set. She brought 10 dancers to like our itty bitty nightclub in Sydney, and it was one of the most electrifying performances I've ever seen. But I first got to perform for her at her birthday party. She was on tour in Australia, and I thought Lady Gaga's birthday party, it'll be like epic. There'll be production and stage and lights, but it was an outdoor dinner for like 16 people at the Botanic Gardens. And there was like somebody, you know, holding like a mag light, you know,
a flashlight
for your spotlight.
Kind of. It wasn't quite that janky, but it was close. And there was no stage, so I thought, well, the table is my stage. Got up on the table and sang "Sweet Transvestite" for Lady Gaga, and then gave her dad a lap dance. And
well, would you perform the piece for us?
Yeah, I will. This is a mashup of Lady Gaga's "Poker Face," Kylie's "Can't Get You Out of My Head," and Madonna's "Vogue." This is my pop diva medley. I wanna roll with him, a hot pair we will be. A little gambling, it is fun when you're with me. Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun. Oh, I'll get him hot. Show him what I got. Oh, Jesse. I'll get him hard. Show him what I got. Can't read my. No, he can't read my poker face. He's got me like nobody. Can't read my. No, he can't read my poker face. He's got me like nobody. Poker face. Poker face. Poker face. Poker face. La 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 la. I just can't get you out of my head. Boy, your loving is all I dream about. I just can't get you out of my head. But your loving is all I dream about. Everywhere you turn is heartache. It's everywhere that you go around. You can try everything you can to escape a pain life that you know. If all else fails and you long to be something better than you are today, I know a place where you can get away. It's called a dance floor, and here's what it's for. You know it, come on, Vogue. Let your body move to the music. Yeah. Come on, Vogue. Let your body go with the flow. You know you can do it, come on, Vogue. Let your body move to the music. Yeah, come on, Vogue. Let your body go with the flow. You know you can do it. Can't read my. No, he can't read my poker face. La 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 la.
In the act. Caught in the act. Now, I imagine that when Lady Gaga's watching other people perform her songs back to her, she's like, yes, poker face. Kylie Minogue, boo.
Madonna, boo.
But was she actually like totally just, you know, lovely and received it?
They say that you shouldn't meet your idols because they'll disappoint. But honestly, Gaga, everything, I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everything that I thought about her was true. Everything I felt about her was true, and everything that I'd heard.
So she's a raving coke addict who
can't
make eye contact with people because she's high all the time and wears sunglasses.
All of that is fictional media stuff.
Okay.
The woman that I met was this really fascinating, warm, love, and I've met her, you know, over a course of years several times, and she's always been very consistent, very genuine, very warm.
Of course she's going to be nice to you. You're a Courtney act.
But, like, we were just... She didn't have to be. Like, she just, you know, we were just hanging out. Like, she could have...
Did you get to meet her hot boyfriend, Taylor Kinney?
No, he was not there.
Because, honey, you would have stolen her man.
She's smarter
than that. Lady Gaga
would
steal your man.
She didn't get to where she is.
Taylor had to stay home for that party.
He just did the polar plunge here in Chicago because he films his TV show here. And so he's like shirtless running out of our cold Lake Michigan. I'll show you the picture after the podcast.
Before we get to the questions of the listeners, I want to know about the time that you fell in love with a straight guy.
Yes.
And he wasn't onto the fact that you were... A dude.
You'll have to be more specific because there's been more than one time.
Oh, this has happened
the
many
Marine.
Times.
Is this the Marine?
The Marine. Yeah. Tell me the story of the Marine.
Because he was going to follow you home, huh?
Yeah. So there was this, it was like a scene, it really was like a scene from a movie. And it all kind of happened almost in slow motion or like just CinemaScope, something. And I was standing there like, in my head, it's odd because I'll just describe it in this romantic way. It could have been dirty and disgusting and it's like standing in the gutter. But in my head, I was like standing there under this lamplight waiting for my car and this
totally dressed up.
Totally dressed up, looking really glamorous and pretty and fishy. And and this tall, handsome, like all-American guy came and stood in the line next to me. And I was just like, hi. And we just started talking. And honestly, it was like time stopped. We were just like looking. I was just like looking into his eyes and we were just talking. And it sounds ridiculous, but it was one of those like we were just.
Did he hold your hand?
Did he touch you?
He did more than hold my hand.
He kissed you.
We got to first base. Well, we got to like we
kissed
on the.
What did he like? Try to feel your boob, and it's like
it's like birdseed. What?
No, we just kissed on the lips, and we kind of were like brushing against each other, and thankfully,
so he was a gentleman. He didn't feel the silicone.
Oh yeah, he was like
foam.
Really lovely, and we were just chatting and talking, and I just remember like not. I don't know if it was like 20 seconds or like 5 minutes, and then our cars arrived. We were waiting at the valet, and our cars arrived. And we swapped numbers and was like, you know, follow me home. And he was like, sure. And we kind of like had a little kiss on the lips. Not the full pash. That's an Australian word for to kiss with tongue. Pash.
The pash.
The pash. A pash. Okay. So we had a little kiss. And I hopped into my car and I was just like, oh, wow, this guy's like really lovely. And like he's a Marine, like this big, strong, straight. Oh, hang on a minute. Did he? Am I? And I realized that I totally forgot that I'm not a woman. It's not that I forgot that I'm not a woman. I just forgot that that was even relevant.
He didn't know everything that he needed to know about
and
you.
And so you're like, did he know? Did he not know? Did he get it? Does he care?
And I would never mislead somebody in that respect. Like I mean, just for my own personal safety. I mean, the man is a Marine. His hands are lethal weapons. I've seen that movie.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like if he found out and he punched me in the face, it would feel like a kiss.
Kiss with a fist. Yeah. I mean, I think in theory you think that, but when you're, there's so many horrible stories about, you know, trans women or drag queens, you know, I didn't.
You don't
want to
put yourself in danger.
And more than that, I just didn't want to deceive somebody. Because even though I know that I'm dressed up as the opposite gender, it can be perceived as deceiving. I think when it goes into that sexual territory, I'm always up front. So I sent him a text message saying, hey, just want to check, you know, I'm not a real girl, right? Because in my head, like, real girl is like the least offensive way of like, I just want to check, you know, I'm a man. It's kind of like a bit confronting.
Yeah.
And then he wrote back, I don't understand. Like, can you explain? What are you talking about or something? And then I sent a picture back saying, sometimes I look like this with a photo of me from that night, and sometimes I look like this with a photo of me as a boy. It wasn't a dick pic. And then I heard nothing back from him. Yeah, no, that was the end of it. And it was just funny because I think sometimes...
Didn't he like text you later that night?
I think he texted me...
Like hours and days later or something.
He texted me... I think I said, I just want to check, you know, and he wrote back shortly after saying, I don't understand. And then I sent him the photos back. No, he wrote. I have to read my diary because I wrote it all down because
is a good memoir.
Yeah, I tell a version in my show that doesn't go into the bit about the sending the photo and whatnot.
That's because, the good part, though. Well,
that's the pragmatic part.
You're like, well, I could. Because that's the thing about it is, and every person who tries to hook up on those hookup apps, it's like, do you show them the worst photos of you or the best photos in order to hook up for sex?
Well, I've long believed that you always judge a person by their worst online dating / social media photograph, because ultimately that's what they really look like. Because people are, this is what I want you to think I look like. But then if there's one bad one, that's a lot closer to the truth.
So why retouch any of your publicity photos? Why remove the lace front from your wig?
Well, because photographs are still moments of time. Video doesn't get retouched. Like RuPaul's Drag Race is not retouched.
Britney was retouched in her video.
Honey. Well,
Britney
was retouched. Honey.
RuPaul is retouched. Anytime the rest of us are
RuPaul
not.
RuPaul is taped before a live audience. Her face is taped back and stretched out and distorted in every way.
But on the show, you know, we're all as is. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, when you're in motion, there's, you know, but when you're taking one still moment of time, you just need to enhance it a little bit. I try not to, like, you know, go too crazy with my photos. But I actually, you know, Magnus Hastings, the photographer that I work with, he does this series called Dragged Around the World, and he's traveled all around the world photographing mm-hmm. drag queens. He leaves a lot of detail in the photos. Like, if you look at my photos, you can still see the eyebrow wax where I've, like, glued down my eyebrows. You can still see little bits of reality because I kind of like people looking at it and going, wow, and then looking and being like, hang on a minute. And seeing,
I do like that about that too.
Details. So you're one of the queens that can't live without their eyebrows, because a lot of them are just shaving them now. They're just like,
they look like Muppets.
They do. They're like alien Muppets.
And they're like, just draw them on. If you want eyebrows, just draw them on.
I know. I was with Jinx in Sydney just recently, and she's got lovely drawn on eyebrows, which is better than no eyebrows at all. But I just prefer a real eyebrow.
I'm wondering if, like, you know, the way that athletes take performance-enhancing drugs to do well, you're agreeing with me this, that some
shaving.
Of these girls, when they find out they're going to go on RuPaul's Drag Race, they get the estrogen and they start pumping.
Well, I don't know about that, but I feel like shaving... See, in Sydney, shaving off your eyebrows is frowned upon, pardon the pun. And I remember RuPaul tweeting, like, years ago, something about if you're committed about doing drag... First rule, shave off your eyebrows. And I was like, what? I wrote back, don't you mean don't shave off your eyebrows? Like, learn mm-hmm. how to glue them down or wax them down. And then she wrote back, no, I mean, shave them off. The day I shaved off my eyebrows, I sent a message to the universe that I was ready, that I was this, that I was that. And I do get, you know, what she's saying for her. But for me, to be honest, I think my character is Courtney Act, but I think the B character in my story is Shane, is me as a boy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of performers, I mean, Rue does that. I mean, she's a man and a woman.
But he's also black, and like a lot of the black girls I used to work with, they would just shave off their eyebrows and draw them right on.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the kind of, maybe it's a cultural thing.
Let's get to some of these questions. Okay. Lovely listeners, Armando Gallegos. I heard that reality TV contestants put on a mask to show a personality that's not really theirs in order to appear likable. However, as the competition progresses, this mask peels off and contestants reveal their true selves.
I've heard that in relationships, people put on a mask to appear likable, and then as the relationship goes on, they can't keep up the act, and that mask falls away and the relationship falls apart. And
oh, that's interesting.
And I think that that's what happens on reality TV. You know, you can only keep it up for so long. And it's odd. In the Meet the Queens interviews, I was watching them and I was like, I was affronted by how different mine was. Like, just objectively watching, I was like, maybe it's just because it's me. And then other people were like, yours was really different. And I'm just kind of like,
how do you think it was different?
Well, I was just like talking. Whereas like, it was like, well, I'm on RuPaul's Drag Work, Mama Ru. Uh-huh. Yes, hunting. And all of that. And
I kind of would like to see a little bit more artifice in your personality, though.
I know.
That was your Adora Delano imitation,
isn't
it?
That was my, like, LaGanja Delano. Well,
how crazy is LaGanja Estranja? It's like she just seems like she's bouncing off the walls.
She is bouncing off the walls, but you know what? She is oddly lovable.
You said that she, like, irritates the fuck out of you.
Oddly, The first day I was like, I want a Glass, Laganja, Adore, and Gia. And two of them grew on me. One of them didn't. And I...
Who didn't grow on you?
Gia? Our hometown girl.
Have to wait and watch.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, I have to... Actually, I love Gia Gunn. I love Gia Gunn, so now I've revealed who it was.
Absolutely.
I love Gia Gunn.
Who was it? Did you say? You said it was Adore? Oh, Adore Delano you didn't click
No, I
with.
Love Adore. No, Laganja. So, Laganja is very still young.
Is annoying to you.
And yeah. Laganja had the biggest artifice of everybody, as you've seen on the show.
Because you know what? I know Ben, and Ben's like my best friend and stuff. And it's like, well, not my best friend, but a good close friend of ours from Chicago. And when I saw him on the show, I was like, where'd that personality come from? You know?
Well, see, Ben at least has this clear line drawn where he's, as a boy, he's a normal human being. And then in drag, he is a character with a backstory. Like, Ben de la Creme is a straight woman who, you know, I don't know whether she has husbands or kids or whatever. But
the
she's
Lucille
got,
Ball kind of thing.
She's got a story about it. Whereas, you know, like, Laganja and Adore and Gia just kind of had this artifice that... that when I think that Gia and Adore's kind of works in a different way to Laganja's, because Laganja, they're all quite young, I think. I don't know how old Gia is, but yellow don't mellow, so I can't quite tell. But
I heard I'm saying early 20s, maybe 24.
I'm not going to throw my friend under the bus, but she's a little bit older than I am.
Oh, who, no, Gia?
Ben.
Oh, Ben. Oh, I know how old Ben is. Ben and I are the same age.
What?
Hang on, no how way. Old are you?
I'm the same age as you.
I'm 33. Facebook. Oh,
29.
Okay, Stephen Palmer. This show is not about me. Stephen Palmer, Courtney, I was extremely impressed with your discussion of sex and sexuality. Since the airing of episode 2, I have used the two-party referred system just doesn't work. Metaphor often. However, I was a bit concerned that by episode 3, the discussion of having a kai-kai seemed to cause several girls to react very critically and negatively. Why is having a kai kai any different than having sex with a man when one partner is in drag?
I like that people really picked up on that comment about two-party preferred system and all
that. I love
that. Jazz.
Yeah, it's great.
And it seems to have kind of cut through, and people found it really refreshing that somebody spoke about something other than, you know, penises, Kylie, and glitter on RuPaul's Drag Race. And then the kai kai conversation, I mean, Darian was the one who had issues with the kai kai. I've had...
I would think Darian would be lucky to get whatever she can get.
Darian, don't be fooled.
Yeah.
Darian Lake is a dark horse, or a black horse, as Jocelyn likes to say. I won't give away any of her secrets. But Darian,
she gets action.
She gets
action.
She
has a glory hole that she travels around with. It's her suitcase is actually a glory hole.
No, you know what?
She has a little hole in the suitcase and hides behind it and sucks dicks through
Darian
it.
Darian Lake is oddly sexy. Because like often big girls, their sexuality is not as much a part of their character. Like often they'll be funny or they'll be this. But Darian is like really quite sexy. And I remember there was moments where I was like, not just for a big girl, but like there was moments where she was doing stuff and she was giving sex appeal, like oozing it. And I think that, you know, at her home bar in Rochester, that gets a lot of attention.
Mm. Ryan Burdick says he saw you perform at the Stonewall in Sydney.
Yeah.
And was shocked, surprised that nobody gave you a tip.
Yeah.
And that it's not customary to give drag queens tip in Australia.
Correct.
Can you explain why is that a difference?
Well, it comes down...
Because drag queens are starving to death over here?
Kind of.
They are.
I mean, the rate of pay in Australia, even for like a base drag queen, is at least 4 times greater than like in the US. We don't have tipping. Oh, wow. Minimum wage in Australia is like $15.90 or something. In America, it's like $6.
So you don't miss tips? You don't expect them?
No. And also, we don't have $1 bills. The smallest note that we have is a $5 note. A bill, $5 bill.
So you have like coins for
dollars. Yeah, so we have $1 and $2 coins, like the loonie and the toonie in Canada. So it's kind of awkward tipping with the coin.
So it's not like the drag queen can be like detox and bring her purse and just hold the purse out. And that's what she does, like overtly like...
And poor Fifi O'Hara was performing here in town and people were actually throwing coins at her. Wow. And she didn't pick them up. But the drag queen that came up after next to me was like, I'll pick up these quarters.
I'll take those quarters. They go for the washer and the dryer.
Any collaborations with any... Justin Stuckel wants to know if you're going to be collaborating with any Other contestants or drag queens now in the future? Anything you can announce?
I'm making music.
I'm sure that I will, but I've actually I've been collaborating with some people who I can't mention yet. But one person that I have talked about is Sam Sparrow. And I wrote a song together. I'm performing the song. He's not performing on the track. But we wrote a song together, and I'm writing with some really cool names in pop music on Thursday and Friday this week.
Yes, we know that you collaborated with Adele Dazeem. Idina Menzel.
I did sing a duet with Idina Menzel, which was amazing. It kind of, like, Idina Menzel is one of the greatest voices, you know, on the planet.
And you're like, I can sing.
And I'm like,
you.
I'm a little white boy. But I was holding onto her hands whilst like hitting the high notes. And I feel like part of her came through me, because I was like, she was like looking like shocked at these notes. And I was like, I didn't know I could sing those notes either. And it was so cool, because she was just like, it was her show. And she was so supportive and so encouraging. It was on an Atlantis cruise, and there was, you know, 2,000 gay men just like, what? Yeah.
Yes, honey.
Yes, hunty.
I live for that. You look fierce, girl.
And that was really cool.
Sergio, Courtney, were you ever dragged during your time in American Idol? Of course he was. Sergio, ask us better questions.
I have a question from Alvaro. He wants to know, which would you say is the most effective way of learning to do drag makeup? Because Alvaro is considering doing drag.
YouTube. There is so many. I learned before YouTube was invented. Drag, I said earlier, drag is kind of something. I don't have any drag children. I had my tubes tied shortly after birth. But drag is a kind of thing that it's kind of like a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
For most of my 20s, it was probably like 60% curse in my head, 40% blessing. And now it's kind of like 90-something percent blessing. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of struggles that go with doing drag. And so I don't know, maybe it's different in America, but there's not an over-eagerness to help somebody become a drag queen. The first person that did my face was actually like a makeup store, but then the second person was a drag queen. She kind of did half of my face, and then she said, all right, if you want to leave the house, you can do the other half.
Ooh.
And I thought that was cunty. I was like, oh, God, okay. So I had all the products that she used.
It was like throwing you into the water and saying, swim now.
Swim, yeah. And then another friend did my face, and then I just...
She wouldn't leave you leave the house unless you, like...
Well, I could have left the house, but I would have looked like I had a stroke.
Okay.
Did you do an okay job on the other half?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen photos, and I think she came back at the end and just kind of like touched it up a little.
But I mean, you have a very smooth, even face and a very beautiful proportioned face, so it's easy for you to put on makeup. You don't have to hide much.
This is the thing. Mm-hmm. If you get a makeup artist to do my face, I look like a boy wearing girl's makeup. This is the odd thing. Because you think, oh, she just wears a bit of lipstick and a bit of mascara and she looks like a girl. But there's a lot of unseen stuff, like the shading and the proportions, the size of the eyelash, the size of the lips, the everything kind of, it's like a mathematical algorithm happening on my face and on my body and on all drag queens' faces. And that's why you see, you know, the girl at the Mac counter does your face for Halloween and you look like a bloke that's Australian for man, a man wearing women's makeup. And that's what I look like when a female makeup artist.
Because women have bigger eyes, they have more space between their eyes, they have softer chin, so you have to kind of like hide all that kind of stuff.
And it's only
or make it bigger.
Fine detail, but I think perhaps that's like, that's why as a boy, although I don't look like overtly masculine, I still look like a boy. And then as Courtney, I kind of look like a girl.
Are you in the Jinx Monsoon of tucking or the, let's see, because Jinx doesn't tuck. She uses a pantyhose to press it down. Sharon tucks traditionally by sticking her dick backwards and taping that down. And Raja's dick isn't big enough for anyone to see.
Well, she is Indonesian, so.
Yeah.
But what is like your genital preparation?
I don't wear pantyhose or stockings. So often I'm wearing...
So you have like smooth legs already.
Yeah.
So you shave your legs.
I shave my legs. And often I'm not wearing enough clothes that I could be wearing anything underneath. So I just tape. I've got a few methods. I'm not going to say I pioneered, but I'm going to popularize right now a method of taping. I was taught like back in the 2000s by some of my trans women friends who were in the Lay Girls, this legendary sort of showgirl review. And I've had some problems with that method. I always had like a very meaty vagina, a big outer menorah kind of menorah. That's a candelabra, isn't it?
Labia minora.
Labia minor, labia majora.
Majora.
My labia majora was always very...
The beef curtains.
I had beef curtains and they'd always like pop out the side. And so now I actually use the, you know, that paper surgical tape. It's kind of like...
Yeah,
like,
it's wonderful stuff.
Yeah, and it's not too strong.
You get it like the store, right?
The first aid
stuff.
So I pop my testicles up inside me and then I take my penis and my scrotum and I bind... Like an Asian woman's foot, I bind my scrotum to my penis and create a stump, a mega penis, if you will, and then I pull that between my legs, and then I use the traditional tape. Like I've got some flesh tape,
I'm just gonna wear a skirt.
Can't you just?
That sounds like a lot of work.
Well, at least you're not doing the Carmen Carrera thing where it's like crazy glue Oregon.
Have you seen that? Have you seen Carmen Carrera's crazy glue pussy up close?
No, I haven't.
It's
a work of art.
Yeah.
Carmen Carrera goes one step further and manages to fold the flesh on the sides of her penis to push it in and then crazy glues the whole thing shut to look like a vagina.
And then puts
glitter to sort of hide the glue. But if you look up close, it looks like a web of glue holding together two pieces of flesh. It's amazing.
I can tape a slit into mine. Yeah. I can stand in front of you naked and you wouldn't know that I had a penis. You would just see kind of like... Probably like a teenage girl's vagina, which is...
We've all seen Silence of the Lambs.
When you're doing all this, media tour, you're expected to be the winner, you know, definitely do very well in the season of Drag Race. And, you know, one thing that a lot of transgender personalities and actors criticize is that the interviewer always focuses on their body, mm-hmm. you know? And part of it is because, you know, some of them are very beautiful women and others, you know, do rely on their body a lot. Carmen Carrera, for example.
Quit relying on that body.
Literally coined the phrase by Michelle Visage. And she gets on interviewed by Katie Couric. And Katie Couric's like, what's going on down there, you know? And she was like, I'm offended by that question.
We just discussed what happens down there.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was an interesting moment in media because trans women in particular have been, you know, that's the sensational part of the conversation, you know, what's between your legs. And, you know, there's been we saw a lot of that in the 90s on, you know, Jerry Springer and Sally Jesse and Oprah, and everybody has sort of been through that conversation. And it's really interesting now, you know, Laverne Cox is a brilliant, you know, charismatic, intelligent trans woman. And she transcends her gender and she connects with people in a way that, You watch Laverne Cox speak and you just see that she's a human being and you're like, oh, wow, I'm a human being. She's a human being. We're different physically, but I get that we're both human beings. And I feel like she just takes that and sort of transcends what she is and connects with people in this beautiful way. And I love the way that she backed up Carmen on that question because, you know, Carmen's a lot younger and hasn't mm-hmm. had as much experience and was kind of like, oh, well, I don't want to answer that question. But it was a valid point. And then Laverne kind of took it and was like, you know, this is the thing, Katie. And it's a sensational aspect. We have the internet now. You can look it up. I understand that there's probably most of the audience still haven't really had much dealings with trans people, and so it is kind of like a fascinating subject, but it does reduce trans people to their genitals. And for trans people, that's kind of like, that's the one part of their body that is incongruous to how they feel. Mm-hmm. And so I get that for them and their sort of feelings, that's important.
Do you feel like in interviews, as you do these, that you feel like in some ways you are being, choosing to do a show, Boys Like Me, that kind of does reduce you to your genitals by choice and talks about your sex life and your gender expression and everything. Do you feel that sometimes the media is focusing on you too much personally, on your sex life and your body?
No, I think, I don't think Boys Like Me reduces me to my genitals. It reduces, it Boys Like Me is a selection of stories about sexual experiences I've had, but it's not in a smutty kind of, it's not a sex for sex sake kind of story. It's an observation about the diversity of gender and sexuality. So it's not reducing something to gender or sexuality. It's actually explaining the diversity to the people who are watching. So at first people are like, oh God, she just told a story about losing a virginity. Oh, she just told a story about sex with straight twins in Montreal. Oh, she just, and then.
This sounds wonderful. This
sounds
like
sex
porn.
With straight trans and
you're going to have to come and watch the show when it comes to Chicago.
Yeah.
It'll be here.
Well, you're going
to
be at the Laurie Beachman Theater, March 28th, 29th and 30th.
In New York City.
In New York City.
And you can book at spincyclenyc.com.
It does sound like it is sexually very revealing.
Well, what it does is then it kind of goes through these different stories. And then at some point, I've talked about having sex with a girl. I've talked about having sex with a straight man, a gay man, as a, in drag, out of drag, as a top, as a bottom. You know, there's a all sorts of different stories that are in there. And I kind of cover the Kinsey scale. I have a firsthand understanding of the Kinsey scale. And I try and articulate that through my stories on stage, and people hopefully get to sort of see that gender and sexuality are fluid and are diverse. And so there's not a whole lot of.
Do you get a lot of trade afterwards? You get a lot of people coming up and be
this
like,
"This is just an elaborate ruse to seduce somebody in
maybe
the audience."
It is. Maybe see that's the binary element. Maybe there is a little bit of trade. Maybe there's a lot of good. Who knows?
So if we have to pay to have sex with you, then it's costing more now because you're famous.
If you have to pay to have sex
with me. They said that Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton both are very expensive call girls. And when they like hook up for guys with sex, that it's like in the hundreds of thousands, $500,000 for one night with
they
them.
They say lots of things. I don't think either of those
you don't think
true.
That's true?
You don't I don't think Kim's it's hooking. True.
You don't think Pimp Mama Chris is putting out those girls?
Maybe Mama Chris, but no, I actually was, this is an odd story. I was BFFs with Paris for like a month or so in 2003. Yeah. And she was in Australia for a while working on different stuff. And she was such a sweet and lovely girl, like hanging out with her in her hotel room away from all of the hype and whatnot. And I actually watched the Paris Hilton sex tape with Paris Hilton. She had never, it came out when she was in Australia.
What?
And my friend Rob and I were with her, and there was all of these like rumors about this sex tape. And so we got her publicist's laptop and we sat there and we typed it in and we watched the Paris Hilton sex tape that came to be known as One Night in Paris. And she was absolutely mortified. There was definitely no, it wasn't.
You think she was like faking
so
it?
She hadn't heard.
She was like Googling, searched. Like, why would she care about like two Australian? Like,
I think I would be mortified too that if I haven't had sex, that I'm answering a cell phone call while being penetrated.
But like, she did answer the phone while
she was
getting.
She answers the phone,
and she was getting fucked up the butt, right?
I don't know. We only watched the first part, but
we don't know where it's going in. But it's like in the video. But it's obviously clear that she's being pounded, and she's like, yeah. What? Oh, no, nothing. What are you up to?
One of the first things she said, like she had this, like she was in shock, instant shock about this movie. And then she clicked and she was like, oh, my God, Conrad is going to see this, her little brother. And she you could see that the realness of all of this kind of happening and unfolding on her face. And then she kind of had this nervous laugh. And Rob was like, why is she laughing? And I'm like, she's freaking out. That's why she's laughing.
Yeah.
And so for me, being there as a firsthand witness, it was a very real thing.
As her friend, how did you comfort her? Or did you just go, girl, well, you know, you look like a raccoon going through the garbage when you're eating that banana.
Rob said, oh, your tits were heaps bigger there. And I'm like, Rob. And she's like, oh, I was on the pill. And he was like, could you go back on the pill? And I'm like, stop it. And I was like, listen, you look really good in night vision.
It did make a career for her, though. That blew her up.
It kind of did.
In some ways, she's, you know, bad things happen, but sometimes good things happen out of bad things.
She was she wasn't the pioneer of the sex tape, but she was one of the modern pioneers.
Yeah, she was definitely
a
modern pioneer.
And Milk and I are hoping to be pioneers of the modern drag sex tape.
Bianca Del Rio Adora Delano said that they're not turned on by you or Milk or anything. But you were saying that if Milk was available, that you'd have sex with him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love Milk. He's
You're much
handsome.
Hotter than Milk.
Is he?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Mo's a good looking guy, don't get me wrong, but he's really tall.
How tall is he?
6'4"
I don't know. He always wore extra big shoes. Like, we wore like
enormous
5-inch heels. He wore like 10-inch heels. So that also throws it off. No, but Milk is a very handsome man. He's really lovely.
He's an athlete.
He definitely looks athletic.
I know he's a figure skater.
Ice dancer. Yeah.
Adora said he's got a terrible ass.
Do you know what? I'm not so much of an ass man, so I didn't really look. But I just like, I mean, I.
He's packing heat, honey. That's the reason why he dresses so crazy. Is because he cannot hide that monster cock.
Well, only he and his boyfriend and probably a slew of other gay men that he's had sex with.
You girls all like shared a dressing room for weeks with this guy.
We didn't get our cocks out and wave them in the breeze.
Nobody did. Nobody got naked in this. Because it seems like in the past season all sorts
Trinity may have. I think Trinity did flash me at one point.
Because a lot of the girls actually walk around naked to thwart and, you know, throw the other girls off.
Well, I walk around naked, taped.
Yeah.
They also blur a lot. I was in Australia when the first two episodes came out, and I didn't have American television, so of course I didn't want to illegally download it, so I used my iTunes America account to watch RuPaul's Drag Race, and it's in HD on iTunes, and there's no bleeping or censoring.
Oh, so if you pay for it on iTunes,
you can see it.
You get to see your dick.
Yeah, but that's why I'm waiting for a dick so that I can. I'm going to go back to a previous.
I think Alaska showed his dick.
I'm
going
to go back
to
that Alaska episode and see if we get to see Alaska's
wing. Honey, everybody's seen
HD.
Alaska's dick.
That's true.
On
except
stage,
Sharon these days.
Oh. Too soon.
Courtney Act, it's a pleasure. I just want to continue this conversation. I feel like it's ending too soon. My God.
It's nothing worse than, you know.
You'll have to, next time you're in Chicago, please stop by again.
I will. Well, I definitely want to come back and do my one-woman show. I was talking to the producer in New York that I was working with, and he's going to work on some connections here in Chicago.
Wonderful.
Oh, honey, fantastic to meet you. I absolutely adore you.
Thanks.
I'm so sorry that we didn't have time to have sex with you.
Oh, sorry. Got to go to soundcheck.
But we're working on that. you can learn more about Courtney Act and root for her, Team Courtney, at CourtneyAct.com.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're on Twitter, Instagram,
it's
all that
all
stuff.
All Courtney Act.
Is there anything you want them to do besides buying stuff?
I have a song called To Russia With Love that I just released a few weeks ago on Valentine's Day. I mean, I'm a pop music artist. I love pop music. I'm writing and recording more. I'm planning on EPs and albums later in the year. My first independent single, Welcome to Disgraceland, is online. To Russia With Love is online. You can download them. You can listen to them. You can watch them.
How are Russians reacting to this song?
Really well.
They are.
I was like, I meant it with a good heart, that it was a message of solidarity to not just the LGBT people of Russia, but everybody. Women in Russia have got it really bad. And you know what? Even Putin, because he needs, obviously, a little bit of love.
Yeah.
Because otherwise he wouldn't be acting like such an asshole.
Well, you remember Elton John's song Nikita that he sang to a male border guard, but in the music video it's a chick.
Yeah.
Oh, Nikita, you will never know anything about my bone.
It was originally
Nikito. You'll never know how good it feels for me to fuck you.
You've rewritten some of the words slightly.
It's the uncensored version on iTunes.
Right.
In your video, you're in it as a boy and as a girl.
Yeah.
Which is fun to see.
And it was funny because I was shooting this. I was going to Russia. I don't want to ruin the magic that it wasn't filmed in Russia. But anyway.
I believe that you were escaping Russian soldiers trying to arrest you.
Thank you. I'm glad.
Yeah.
God bless stock footage. But so I was going to film this music video and I'm like, who am I going to get to play my lover? And then I remembered there was this boy who I met at Burning Man a few years ago who lived in Canada where we filmed it. And I looked him up and he was going to be there at the snow. And it was actually good because we'd already gotten it off in Burning Man and we were looking forward to seeing each other. And we're like, hey, save it for the cameras, boys. And turn the cameras on.
You should have shot a porn.
I know, right? To Russia With Love Uncut.
Well, if this whole drag thing doesn't go well for you, you can always do porn.
Well, it's going well so far.
Like
Chris Crocker.
Chris Crocker.
Like Chris Crocker. You know what? I'm all for people doing porn and I have no issues with sex work or porn or anything. But I am just born for the stage to be glittering and glitzy and singing and having a great time. I just love it.
Well, you do a good job at it.
Well, I say if you're going to do porn, do me a favor. Just make sure it's good.
Right.
Cringeworthy. Courtney Act is on RuPaul's Drag Race. You can check that out on Logo. If you don't have cable television, which most people don't, you can watch it online at logotv.com.
Most people don't have cable television?
It's rude. It's diminishing. Our audience... If you're a man under the age of 30, do you know how what percentage of that is like 15% have a cable television account?
Wow.
Yeah, people just watch everything on the internet these days.
It's like...
That's how we watch RuPaul's Drag Race, or we go down to the bar down the street.
I don't have a TV, so I watch it on logotv.com.
Yeah, it's the only way to do it.
And that Logo TV app that gives you the first 10 minutes of the next episode, I kind of love it and I kind of hate it because then when I'm watching the next episode, I'm like, I've seen this already.
I have a bone to pick with Logo. You can't get Untucked on the app.
Can you get the full episode on the app?
You can.
Okay, but not Untucked.
But by then it's like, you know, you already watched the first
and
15.
Then if you pause it, because like if you're on Netflix, you can stop the app, you know, and then come back to it and it saves your spot.
Right.
This does not. No. So it's still janky.
And let's face it, the only reason we watch RuPaul's Drag Race is so that Untucked makes sense, right?
Actually, I would say that Untucked is a lot better this season because of you and Bianca.
Bianca is every producer's dream. Like, she is like the narrator of the show. Well, I'm glad that you like me as well.
Well, I would say your discussions on sex and sexuality and gender expression are unprecedented on the show and well received and well needed. And without you and without Bianca, there will be no show. So guess who's in the top three, hunties?
We hope so. We hope so. That's for sure. I want to remind listeners we can't do the show without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, please sign up at feastoffun.com/plus. We also have T-shirts for sale at feastoffun.com/store.
Hanti is a shirt that looks fierce and fabulous. Mm-hmm. You can pretend like you went to college. You're graduating from the cooking school of drag, and it's time to make them eat it.
It was fun to see Pandora Box out of drag wearing a Hunty t-shirt and her Logo TV recaps.
There you go. Little product placement.
Thank you, Pandora.
And thank you, Courtney Act.
Thank you for having me.
Delicious, delightful. Gorgeous, give me a kiss. What did they say? A kiss with tongue?
A pash.
A pash. Give me a pash, girl.
Give you a pash. If there's one thing I can give America, it is the word pash. And probably just a pash. One big pash.
You are a pash for the senses.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.